Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver. I am delighted to sit with you. We're going to sit together for 10 minutes and we're going to start soon. So please take your seat and get settled, whether you're on a cushion on the floor, with your legs crossed loosely in front of you, or in the equally spiritual chair or couch. But wherever you sit, please try to find a way to feel uplifted in your posture. Before we begin, I wanted to say a little bit more. I started talking about this last week. You don't have to go back and listen to anything if you missed that, about the sort of non-standard but very, very real results of a continuous meditation practice. As you may have heard me say before, we often start our practice because we want to be less stressed and all sorts of reasonable things. But something else starts to happen as our practice takes root. And as far as I know, no one can explain how this happens. And if someone can, I don't want to know, because it's a mystery. And that relates very much to what I want to say today. So you may have noticed or will notice that as you sit 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes, 45 minutes, whatever it is, as much as you can, a couple times a week, every day, who knows, the way you move in the world begins to change. I don't mean physically. I mean, the way you feel as you go through your day, you start to notice differences, big or small. Here are some things I've heard people say. For example, I'm less triggered by the things that would always set me off. I feel somehow that I'm more patient with things that I'm usually impatient with. I cry more easily. I can feel more directly what other people are telling me they feel. I seem to be a little bit more clear on who I really am in this world. So those are big things. How does that happen from sitting here doing nothing? That's the part I don't want anyone to explain. So anyway, last week we talked about the importance of ritual, surrounding our practice with ritual. And you can go listen to that if you want, but you don't have to, as a way of re-emphasizing every time you sit that this is a spiritual practice that has profound results. It's not only, or it may not be primarily, a psychological or a biochemical thing that results in self-improvement. Okay, all those things are probably true. But here in the Open Heart Project, and as I was trained as a practitioner now for close to 35 years, those are not the real reasons we practice. Although, again, those are really real and good things. But we're practicing to go deeper into ourselves and our lives and our relationships and our creativity and so on. That's one way of saying it, and not a very good way, because the real reason, according to the Buddhist training that I've received, that we practice is to be more compassionate toward others and, of course, toward ourselves, and to perhaps even wake up from delusion completely. I don't know what that is, because not having accomplished it myself. So anyway, last week we talked about ritual, and this second thing of six that I'll mention over the coming weeks is what we focus on in the Open Heart Project Sangha, the membership community within the Open Heart Project, which you are very warmly invited to join. So we practice a daily ritual. That was the first thing. And this will relate to you whether you join the Open Heart Project Sangha or not. Although I hope you will. The second thing that I said is we live as mystics hiding in plain sight. Now, what did I mean by that when I wrote it down? I'm not 100% sure, but when I wrote it down, I was like, yeah, that's a good one. So I suppose, I mean, I do remember. I know what I meant. Living as a mystic doesn't mean wearing a turban and flowing garments and I don't know what one might imagine, but it means something more like relating to what is alive in every moment, in yourself, in the animate and the inanimate world, finding some sense of connection to the awake quality that is present. Another thing that is meant is we know, although it's very easy to forget, at least speaking for myself, that there are more important things than being successful, making money, keeping up with whatever the Joneses. I mean, I want to be successful. I want to make money. I'm totally into those things myself. So I'm not suggesting those are bad things at all. But we know two things about them. One, there are more important things to concern ourselves with, in addition to those also very important things. And the second thing is, they're not going to actually make you happy. I mean, they may make you happy for a minute or more, which is great. Please be happy for many minutes, as many as you can. But ultimately, accomplishing these aims, again, which I hope you will, and I hope to do too, they're not going to prevent us from the suffering of being human, which is part of the deal. We're all going to experience loss. We're all going to be disappointed. We're all going to have things that we love and then lose them. And we're going to get things we really wanted. And they're going to be like, oh, not exactly what I thought. Not trying to be a bummer here, just saying this is part of being human. And of course, all the other things too. There are moments of great joy and satisfaction and contentment and connection and love and creative self-expression. There's all sorts of good things too. But it's painful. No matter how good your life is, there's pain associated with being human. So part of the mystic's point of view is real happiness comes from somewhere else. Now, where? I can't tell you because I'm still looking myself, but I know it's not those things. So we work in our lives to constantly remember that there's something deeper going on than conventional aims, again, which are important. I'm not trying to say they aren't. I have so many conventional aims, and I try to be very practical and smart about how I go about them. Nonetheless, it's important to remember, remind yourself every day or regularly about what is really true, what is really important. Self-knowledge, caring about the people in our life, caring about the people who aren't in our life, caring about the planet, caring about animals, caring about nature, caring, is what actually brings happiness. It seems to begin with the way we care about our environment. Like, where are you right now? Did you tidy it up? I mean, I know I seem like I'm Marie Kondoing all over the place these days, but do you treat your environment with respect? Do you treat your body with respect? Do you treat the food you eat and consume it with respect for it and for yourself? These are good places to start with caring. So I guess the last thing I'll say about this, we live as mystics hiding in plain sight, is to remark on the truth of suffering once again. And again, I don't mean to be a downer, but Buddhism talks about various kinds of suffering. And the first kind is regular. Not sure what it's really called, but it's regular. All the things I mentioned. We have losses, we have heartbreaks, we have disappointments, we have all sorts of nutty, bad things. Even in the best of lives, painful things happen. Okay, that's the not optional. That's going to happen. The second kind of suffering is called the suffering of suffering, which is what we add to it through various means. Maybe we create storylines around our suffering that are not useful. Maybe we fall into a pit of despair, which, who hasn't? Maybe we get angry and we cause other people more suffering. So, but suffering, not optional. Suffering of suffering, optional. You do not have to do that kind of suffering. How do you not do it? Well, we're fixing to experiment with that way in a moment. Through the practice of meditation, through applying mindfulness and awareness to yourself and to your experience. And that's what we're practicing on the cushion, mindfulness and awareness. So you'll be able to do it in your life. I mean, it's good to be able to do it on the cushion, but that's not where it counts the most. Where it counts the most is out there pointing to my front door. So the third kind of suffering that I'll mention is called all-pervasive suffering. And this relates particularly to the mystic point of view, I would say. All-pervasive suffering means something like this general ambient feeling that something's not right here. Is this it? No matter how much you have, is this all there is? Something could go wrong. Uh-oh, I better be on high alert. Makes sense. Just a sense of there's suffering around the corner or outside the door, or a sense of all pervasive suffering that what you think will be satisfying maybe isn't as satisfying as you think, and so on. That's also optional. We can sort of pierce the veil of all pervasive suffering by continually bringing our minds back to what is happening in the present. Even if what is happening is a form of suffering, when you're engaged, when you're absorbed, when you are bringing your awareness to your experience, it sort of cuts the tie to all pervasive suffering because you're connecting to real suffering. So it's not ambient, it's happening right in front of you. So I totally realize that this is not, maybe not helpful, maybe not why you came to the Open Heart Project for meditation, but nonetheless, I want to keep pointing to the post-conventional consequences of meditation practice. First, to engage in ritual supports these post-conventional results. And second, to imagine, because it's probably true, that in some way you are living as a mystic, hiding in plain sight. Again, you're not wearing robes and so forth, but you're engaged in something quite profound. That's what I think. So next week we'll talk about the third one. As mentioned, there's six. The third one is, oh yeah, the personal is not the obstacle. It is the way. So you may have heard Buddhist-y people say things like, you guys should get rid of your ego and so on. Next week, we can talk about why that's BS and how it is actually the way or a way. Okay, let's sit. So begin your practice, please, by forgetting everything I just said. And just establish your posture. Sit up straight. As a way of reconnecting with your inherent dignity, not as a way of trying to look like a meditator or whatever other reason you might have, but to feel your own dignity. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. Let the belly relax. Let the shoulders soften. Chin is tucked a little bit, so the back of the neck is long and the mouth is closed. but the lips and teeth can be slightly parted. Breath is natural in and out through the nose, meaning there's no breathing technique. You're already really good at breathing. I had hip replacement surgery last month. The eyes are open and the gaze is cast down to a comfortable spot in front. And let there be a sense that your vision streams from the eyes like the rays of the sun. And like the rays of the sun, vision mixes with space rather than targeting one thing in space. It's a sense of just relaxing the eyes and seeing. And let the brow soften. Bring your attention to your breath, which means feel your breath, not observe. Feel the body breathe in and out. Just feel the inhale and the exhale. Come all the way out with the exhale. At the end, there'll be a little gap, a little space, and the next inhale just happens. So go with that. Again and again. Let your mind be as it is. No need to slow thinking down, change thinking, turn thinking off. Yes, you can't. So just let it be. While your primary focus is on the breath, thoughts can fall to the background, like people talking in the next room. Now, if you notice that you've become absorbed in a line of thought, not a thought, like you spaced out. Okay, well, you noticed that. So already A plus, that's great. Notice that you're thinking. Label it thinking. So that's different than meditating. This is thinking. Let go. Gently come back to this breath and begin again. Thank you so much for your practice. It's very important. Thank you for practicing with me. Thank you for practicing together. I'll see you next week. And please think about joining the Open Heart Project Sangha. It's a way to continually deepen the conversation, and it would be great to see you there.